Justice Stephen R. Jensen presiding is now in session.
You may be seated. Good morning. The first case before the court this morning is Ansel Russ Limited versus Paul Christodoulou. We have Eric Davis, who will be arguing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Christodoulou, and then Richard Landon, who will be arguing on behalf of Appalee, and then Robert Bright is appearing as local counsel in the case. I note for the record that Justice Salter is appearing through Zoom this morning. He's not able to join us in person. And Justice Salter, are you hearing us okay?
I hear you fine. Thank you very much, Chief Justice.
Okay. Each side will have 15 minutes initially to make your initial arguments, and Mr. Davis, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal at the end. And I'll just note, I can't see the clock because of the way the monitor is set up, so one of my colleagues may bump me if you get down on your time, but just watch the time. Your light will come up at 2 minutes, and then it'll give you a red light when you're done. You may proceed, Mr. Davis.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Jensen, may it please the court, counsel. The issue in this case is whether the state of South Dakota will recognize and enforce an English default judgment against a South Dakota resident in favor of a Russian corporation based on a UK limited liability partnerships agreement to guarantee the debts of a second Russian corporation. The briefing contains references to English civil procedure, the Hague Convention, a complex overseas procedural history, and the appendix to Ansel's brief even contains a contract written in the Russian language. Notwithstanding all that, the only law we need to apply to resolve this case are two short, relatively simple South Dakota statutes. How is that possible? Back in February 2020, Ansel, the plaintiff, presented a $3 million default judgment from the United Kingdom to the Meade County Clerk of Courts in Sturgis, where my client lives with his family, and asked the clerk to register that foreign judgment. This is because Ansel would like to use South Dakota courts and the Meade County Sheriff's Office to enforce on that English judgment to levy against my client's real and personal property in Meade County, which could then be sold to satisfy the English judgment. We have a law in South Dakota that says, essentially, before South Dakota is going to participate in that, we are going to need a little bit of information about this foreign judgment and how it came about. If it looks legitimate to us, then South Dakota will recognize and enforce the judgment. I'm paraphrasing, of course. We'll dive into the specifics shortly. This will be the second time this court has considered whether foreign judgments are enforceable in South Dakota. 21 years ago, in Kwangyan v. Star Fireworks, the court applied the common law doctrine of comity and recognized the enforceability of foreign judgments. Then, in 2013, the legislature abrogated the common law doctrine of comity when it enacted the material provisions of the Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Judgments Act. This case will be, I think, the court's first opportunity to apply those two statutes. We know judgments issued by sister states are entitled to full faith and credit in South Dakota, but SDCL 15-16-44 provides, quote, an out-of-country foreign judgment need not be recognized and entitled to full faith and credit in the state of South Dakota unless, and then the statute goes on to set forth factors South Dakota courts are to consider when they're trying to consider whether to recognize and enforce the particular foreign judgment that is presented to it. The UK judgment against my client has a lot of problems, and I argue at length in the briefs of how the judgment offends most of these statutory factors as independent reasons it should not be recognized or enforced in South Dakota, but there is one that is a real doozy. One of the most bedrock and fundamental principles of American jurisprudence is the concept of due process and the role that service of process plays in satisfying due process. You have to serve someone with legal process in accordance with the law before you can get a judgment against them. This is how you commence an action in South Dakota. It isn't commenced when you file a summons and complaint with the clerk of courts. It's commenced when you serve that summons and complaint on a person who then becomes a defendant in a case. Ansel did not serve my client with process. Mr. Landon and I have very different takes on the sufficiency of the form of the process that Ansel mailed to my client, to his home. But let's set that aside for the moment and assume when Ansel's process left England, bound for Sturgis, it was capable of providing my client with due notice of the nature and extent of the claims that Ansel was making against him in the United Kingdom. But Mr. Christodoulou never received Ansel's mail because he wasn't home. The rural mail carrier apparently had this envelope from England that required a signature, and he wanted to get rid of it, so he brought it to my client's longtime neighbor, Carol Fellner, and said, "Hey, Carol, would you sign for this package for Paul and give it to him when he gets back?" And Ms. Fellner apparently said, "Sure," and she signed for it, and she set it aside, having no idea what was in it. These facts are not in dispute. What I have just described is not service of process in any jurisdiction. It's not service of process in England. Didn't comply with the English court's instructions on how to serve Mr. Christodoulou. It's not service of process according to the Hague Convention, and it is definitely not service of process in South Dakota. In my view, this is not even a close call.
So what part of English law did it not comply with? English law.
Well, there are aspects, and I've admitted in my briefs, of English civil procedure that I do not fully understand. I think we should presume that English civil procedure requires service to actually be delivered to the person whom it is intended for. But what we do know in this case are what the English court's instructions were. The English court's instructions said, go serve Mr. Christodoulou in accordance with the Hague Convention and use a method of post that whereby the defendant signs for the documents. We know that the defendant did not sign for the documents. Mr. Christodoulou never signed for any documents. It is not contained within the record whether or not he ever received them.
So can you cite me to any authority in English law that requires it to be personally served on the defendant, or in this case by mail, but actually be delivered to the defendant?
Justice, I believe there may be a citation in one of my briefs. I cannot cite you to a specific portion of English civil procedure right now that requires the judgment to have been personally delivered to Mr. Christodoulou. But respectfully, my argument would be it doesn't matter. Whether or not the judgment is enforceable in England, whether or not it was served according to English law, is one question. That is a question relevant in England, maybe at some point in the future. But the question is whether the method of service satisfies due process under South Dakota law. United are American and South Dakotan concepts of due process. So regardless of what's required in the English court, that is not what we are evaluating. We are evaluating, is this judgment enforceable in South Dakota? And the statute says if it was not served with due citation to the defendant, it is not enforceable. I think this alone, the fact that this judgment was this notice of the nature and the claims in the English judgment not being served personally on Mr. Christodoulou, is all this court needs to consider. I do not think it needs to go any further. However,
Mr. Davis, can I interrupt for a second? Forgive me for the unconventional appearance I have set up this morning, and thank you for bearing with me on that. Can you help me understand the procedural aspects of this case? It comes to us following the denial of what appears to have been a motion for relief under Rule 60B, collateral attack under our rules of civil procedure. What was the object of the Rule 60B relief? Was it that amended notice from February 24th, 2020 recognition of the foreign judgment? Is the foreign judgment itself? Help me I've seen references to it being an attack on the foreign judgment itself. And so I'm curious about what was the object of that motion.
Well, Justice Salter, yes. The procedural history is a little confusing in this case. So what happened, and I'm going from memory here, but I feel pretty confident, Ansel presented a petition to register this foreign judgment, a petition presumably that the court was going to act on. It attempted to personally serve Mr. Christodoulou for the first time, something it never did in the English action. It was not successful. It went to the circuit court and got permission to serve Mr. Christodoulou by publication. I made a notice of appearance in that case, and I filed documents that were essentially an objection to Ansel's petition, setting forth the reasons that the clerk of courts should not register the foreign judgment and why the circuit court should not enforce it. For reasons that are not particularly clear, and I mentioned in my brief it was not, perhaps not material to the appeal, perhaps I was wrong in that regard, the clerk of courts registered the judgment pursuant to Ansel's petition, notwithstanding the objection that we had filed. And we had asked for a briefing schedule, and for whatever reason, a reason that I cannot explain, the clerk of courts registered the judgment. And so then we were in the position of, the judgment was there. We didn't even know. It was registered ex parte. I had made a notice of appearance. We had no idea. And all of a sudden, the Meade County Sheriff is attempting to execute this judgment. And we said, what is going on? And we found out that the judgment had been registered. The procedure was not really clear. I'm not sure the circuit court exactly knew the procedure. Don't think this happens very often at all, much less in Meade County. And so we were in the position of, well, the judgment has been registered. The sheriff has it in his hands. So I suppose we're in the position of needing to move to vacate the foreign judgment. Does that answer your question, Justice Salter?
Well, it's helpful. So I might have a couple of follow-up questions, though. So were you out of time to appeal the registration of the foreign judgment by the time you found out about it? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear that. Would you repeat that, please?
Yes, of course. Were you out of time to appeal the registration of the foreign judgment by the time you found out about it?
We were not out of time, but I'm not sure there was an issue that could be appealed. The circuit court didn't take any action. This was an action. Registering this foreign judgment was something that only the clerk did, and there was never a hearing. The judge never signed an order. To my knowledge, I do not know if I've ever even seen a physical copy of this judgment, but it may be in the record. I'm not sure. So I guess it would be my position we weren't out of time for an appeal, but I'm not sure there was a final order to appeal because the circuit court didn't take any action. I think the clerk registered the judgment in the same way that the clerk routinely registers foreign judgments from other states.
So back to my first question then. What was your motion for Rule 60B relief directed toward?
It was directed at vacating the judgment that had been erroneously entered by the clerk of courts.
The one that you didn't feel comfortable that could be appealed?
Correct.
But it was amenable to, in your view, a Rule 60B motion, but not necessarily, you didn't feel as though it was an appealable order?
It's my position it wasn't an appealable order.
What provision under Rule 60B do you believe supports your view that you can obtain relief?
The motion to vacate the default judgment?
Yes.
That it was entered without any authority to enter it, that it was entered without considering the statutory factors, and that no judicial officer had ever considered the arguments and the objections that we had made in the filed written objection that we made to the clerk's action.
Thank you.
But regardless of whether or not the judgment was served, there are other factors that this court is to consider. These judgments are not entitled to recognition and enforcement as a matter of right. The English judgment itself violates the public policy of the state of South Dakota in two important, separate, and different ways. So even if service was proper, the judgment itself is significantly flawed. First, you were all circuit court judges. And if I came to your courtroom asking for a default judgment and said, oh, by the way, I have never engaged a process server. I never made any attempts at personal service. I mailed the summons and complaint to the defendant, to his home, and I don't know who signed for it, but I do know that someone signed for it. I could never get a judgment. If South Dakota will not issue a judgment on those facts, it should not enforce a judgment on those facts. Preventing the enforcement of such a judgment is, in my view, the entire point of the Foreign Judgments Act. And second, but this is as equally as important, ANSL's judgment against Prologix and its judgment against my client are totally legally irreconcilable. This argument comes off as somewhat academic in the briefs, but it has serious implications for my client. What does ANSL have today? It has an on-the-merits judgment against Prologix in the United Kingdom that says my client bound Prologix to a guarantee as part of his, as a principal of that company, he bound Prologix to that guarantee. If this court recognizes the personal judgment against my client, that judgment necessarily holds that my client did not have the authority to bind Prologix.
Have you recognized that judgment? Have you sought comedy of that judgment in Meade County? Have you sought comedy for that? Have you registered that judgment?
I haven't registered that judgment, no. Our position is that the judgment is not registerable in South Dakota. A court in the United Kingdom determined that Prologix owes ANSL $3 million. That is exactly what it bargained for. That is exactly what it asked for in the English court, and that's exactly what it received. It did not ask for, and it did not receive a personal judgment. My time has expired.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Thank you.
Mr. Landon, you may proceed. You have 15 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. The question before the court today is not whether there is a valid and properly obtained judgment in England. This is something that the appellant concedes on page 4 of his reply brief. The validity of the English judgment is not before the court. The question for this court is whether there was reversible error for the Circuit Court of Meade County to recognize that judgment under SDCL 15-16-45.
Counsel, why isn't the validity of the English judgment at issue? Our statutes, the procedural statutes relating to the registration of foreign judgments, particularly 15-16-A-2, I believe, says that you can raise the same defenses before this court in that process. So why isn't that an issue?
Well, for the most part, because there has been no attack on the judgment in England, which the appellant concedes he doesn't want to do. He does not want to engage.
Where in our procedural statutes is that required with relation to the registration of foreign judgments?
Well, there's not a requirement under South Dakota statute for him to engage in the legal courts in England. However, SDCL 15-16-45 sets forth certain factors to be considered when recognizing a foreign judgment. And the appellant he made this statement during his opening remarks. They do not question, they are not attacking whether a judgment would be enforceable in England. They are not questioning whether the English court has the ability or had the ability to grant that judgment. What he is arguing is that it should not be recognized in South Dakota. And so the question again is whether the circuit court made reversible error in agreeing that the judgment should be recognized under the South Dakota statute. We believe that the circuit court was correct, that the English courts maintain a system of law that reasonably provides for the impartial administration of justice. That's one of the factors that is to be considered by the court in evaluating whether to recognize a foreign judgment.
Does English law require the signature of the person to be served? Because from my review of the record, that is not included. He has never assigned service of the judgment.
Yes, so, I agree with that. The English procedural statutes do say that the defendant should sign for the claim that is mailed. However, English courts do not require strict compliance with those service statutes. And there is a provision that is cited in our brief, and it's addressed by the circuit court in paragraph 20 of its conclusions of law.
And what is required to be relieved of strict compliance under English law?
So the statute in England, it's CPR 6.15, subparagraph 2. This is a provision that gives a court ability for good cause to determine on the whole whether the actions that were actually taken by the plaintiff constitute good service.
So and could that defense, could that be resolved by the circuit court in Meade County then? And what did you make attempts to provide that evidence to the circuit court that would have allowed an English court to make that determination?
I don't believe that that is something that could be determined by the circuit court in Meade County. I think that that is something that, at least in the first instance, would need to be determined by the court where the action was pending in England. However, you know, part of our argument is that by not engaging the English courts, the appellant has failed to let the English courts determine whether service was proper in this case or not.
So the statute that I had asked you about initially, and it's 1516A2, that pertains to the filing of a copy of a foreign judgment here, says a judgment so filed is subject to the same defenses for vacating or staying a judgment of a circuit court in this state and may be enforced or satisfied in a like manner. So that goes back to my question, then. Why could that same defense have not been determined by the Meade County Circuit Court?
Well, perhaps it could have been, but that would have required a showing by the appellant of why those procedural rules in England were deficient. And that
isn't that precisely what he was arguing? That because he didn't sign for it, and it was actually signed for by a neighbor, and he didn't, according to the affidavit, wasn't provided those documents until after the English default judgment had already been entered?
Yes, that is what the appellant is arguing, but as opposing counsel conceded in his argument, he is not aware of what the English court requirements are and can't provide any authority that says that that is grounds for non-recognition of service of process. As I pointed out, there is a provision that still allows a court to retroactively consider all of the circumstances that have been presented and decide whether service was reasonably calculated to provide due notice to the defendant.
So what evidence in the record before this court shows that there were sufficient facts that would have allowed, under the English rule, forgiving strict compliance to be satisfied?
There are a couple things in the record, and if you look at the declaration of Michael Young, the attorney for Ansel Russ in the English action, the record reflects that there was actual notice. We do not dispute that the package that was mailed. I'm sorry.
Well, and I want to make clear, actual notice before the default judgment was entered.
Yes, yes. At least no later than October of 2019, the claim itself was emailed to Mr. Christodoulou at an address that we know he uses and that he has never denied he received that email. What he argues is that under South Dakota law, actual notice is not sufficient. But the question is not whether South Dakota law will ignore actual notice. The question is whether English procedural law.
So is there English law that you can direct us to that would show that email notice would be sufficient to forgive strict compliance with the English civil procedure rules?
Not specifically email, but there is a case that we cite to in our brief, and again, it was acknowledged by the circuit court in paragraph 20. A case from the Supreme Court of the Court of England in Wales. The case title is Abella v. Baadarani, and it is a case that looks at that provision that I just cited to you, 6.15 subparagraph 2. And in that case, that was a case where a plaintiff filed a claim in England against a foreign defendant who resided in Lebanon. And in that case, service was attempted. I believe it was personal service was attempted in that case in Lebanon at the address that they had for the defendant in that case. But after multiple attempts, they were never able to serve it on the defendant. Eventually, what the plaintiff did was they provided a copy to an attorney that they knew represented the defendant in Lebanon. And they argued that that was sufficient service. The defendant eventually challenged that action, saying that there was improper service, that he did not live at the address they tried to serve him at. He never authorized the attorney to accept service on his behalf, and therefore he did not think that service was proper. In that case, the trial court concluded that under 6.15, subparagraph 2, considering all of the facts, the court believed that the plaintiffs had done enough to provide due notice to the defendant of the claims so that the action could be addressed on the merits. And that was reversed at an intermediate level, and the Supreme Court upheld the trial court's decision that, yes, the court can retroactively say, although the language of the statute was not adhered to in service, the actions, considering all of the circumstances, were enough to provide sufficient notice.
You know, I looked at your emails that were submitted to the court, and they all appeared to me to be emails from Ansel, counsel from Ansel, to that email address. I searched and could not find any emails coming the other direction. Did I miss that? Is there any indication that prior to the default judgment being entered where you have emails coming back from that address that shows it was in use then and would, you know?
Sure, Your Honor. I do not believe that there is a copy of an email that is in the record. However, there is testimony from Michael Young about his correspondence back and forth with Mr. Christodoulou. The correspondence, it was settlement discussion. Under U.S. law, we would talk about it being Rule 408 communications. We did not submit any emails because of that reason.
Okay.
But Mr. Young does say in his declaration that he was in correspondence with Mr. Christodoulou at that email address, and he knew that it was an address that was used by the defendant.
Thank you.
We believe that the circuit court in this case did properly conclude that failing to give comity to a valid judgment from a nation that has a system of impartial administration would deny my client's right to rely on that impartial system. The primary challenge on this appeal is that the appellant argues that it should not be enforced in South Dakota because service was defective. We believe that the circuit court correctly determined that the proper place to challenge service would have been in England. And the English system certainly has rules set up to provide a defendant with that relief. Mr. Christodoulou knew those procedures in this case. In fact, he had taken advantage of those procedures in this case. When it was Prologix, his company, that had failed to respond to the lawsuit that was originally filed in 2018. Appellant argues that to enforce the judgment denies him due process. But his desire to avoid adjudication in England is not what due process is meant to protect. What's important to note here is that due process rights, we certainly agree that Mr. Christodoulou is entitled to due process here. But South Dakota civil procedure does not govern the due process consideration here. The rules that South Dakota enforces for when an action is properly commenced in this state are not at issue. His due process is governed by SDCL 15-16-45, which looks to whether the foreign legal system provides for fair administration of justice. The water splash case from the United States Supreme Court teaches that the relevant question are the procedures in the forum in which the action is pending. As I stated before, the English courts do not require strict compliance with the signature requirement. There are considerations that can be taken into account, and the English courts have not been given the opportunity to address that. In his briefs, Appellant's counsel raises the argument that this would be the first time that a foreign judgment would be recognized when there was a lack of actual service. And that's not true. There's another case cited in our brief. It's a California case, the AO Alpha Bank case cited on page 12 of our brief, that dealt with a very similar situation. It was a Russian judgment against a former Russian resident who had moved to California. In that case, the California court was asked to recognize a default judgment that was mailed to an address in Moscow that the defendant no longer lived at. And in that case, there was no actual notice, as there is in this case. However, the court determined that it was still, the efforts were reasonably calculated to provide due notice, and that that was sufficient.
I'm out of time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Davis, you have a five-minute rebuttal.
Thank you. A client is not a citizen of the United Kingdom. He is a citizen of America, and he's a resident of South Dakota, and I do not think he is bound by the laws of the United Kingdom until and unless it's established that the United Kingdom has some sort of personal jurisdiction over him. The record in this case indicates that my client may have visited the United Kingdom as a tourist on one or more occasions. He doesn't do any business there. His companies don't do business there. Prologix is subject to the general jurisdiction of the United Kingdom because it is registered in that country, but my client, as a principal, did not submit himself to that jurisdiction. Now, is the validity of the English judgment at issue? In ways, it is. But mostly, it is not. The way that I would argue that the validity is in issue is the question of personal jurisdiction, which is one of the factors contained in the Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Judgment Act. Did that court have jurisdiction? That court found that it had jurisdiction. How did it find that? Because it had an affidavit of service indicating that Mr. Christodoulou had been served according to English law and according to the English court's instructions when he hadn't. Presumably, that is how that court determined it had jurisdiction. There is no other evidence in this record to suggest that court had jurisdiction.
So is strict compliance required? Could you address the argument just made by opposing counsel regarding CPR 6.15 subparagraph 2 and the Abella versus Abadirani case addressed by the conclusions of law rendered by the circuit court in paragraph 20?
Yes. Let's assume, let me try to answer this question this way. Let's assume that that England does not have strict compliance, does not require strict compliance with its service, and that everything about Ansel's service was appropriate. I still maintain that that is not the question. If If the question is, was service proper in the foreign country, then to me, the corollary of that means that so long as service of process was correct, that means the judgment is automatically entitled to full faith and credit in South Dakota. That is not what it says. The statute says, was there due notice? So what is due notice? I don't think applying the laws of another country is due notice, because what if it says, you know, I mean, we can take a hypothetical and we could take that as far as we can. Maybe there's a country that says just telling the person verbally is sufficient to put them on notice. Are the United States of America and South Dakota bound by those rules? No, we're governed by our own concepts of due process. So I am unable, Justice Kern, to cite to you far into English civil procedure, except for the citation in our reply brief, in a footnote, I believe, indicating how it did not comply with English law. But my argument would be more general as to that hypothetical.
But the scenario you just provided would not be in accordance with the Hague Convention. The scenario that they applied in this case is in compliance with the Hague Convention. And that's what makes the difference.
Well, the Hague Convention requires for the defendant actually to receive the documents. That's also cited, I believe, in a footnote in my reply brief. That's language from Article 15 of the Hague Service Convention. It assumes that the defendant received the process.
What you were saying was that we can take these sort of absurd hypotheticals and use those to say, well, South Dakota is not bound by any of that. The reason South Dakota may be bound in this case is because the United States of America has joined the Hague Convention.
I don't think, well, for the fact that service was proper is not the only consideration here. If this court concludes that service was proper under the Hague Convention, under English law, that is not the end of the inquiry. Then we go to the other portions of my brief that talk about the other material defects with this brief. The English court also modified, it didn't just say go serve it in accordance with the Hague Convention. And again, as this, my position is that the Hague Convention requires the defendant to actually receive the documents. The English court said, whereby the defendant signs for the documents, and the Royal Mail post that was delivered in Sturgis did not require the defendant to sign by the documents. But the point of SDCL 15-1644 and 45 is that there's a host of factors. We examine this judgment holistically. Was it served consistent with our concepts of due process? Is it valid? We don't dispute that overall England has a system of laws similar to ours. It didn't occur in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments in the case. The case is now submitted. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.
Danny boy, oh.